risk you take, the more expected return you should be making. But then if you put your money in a risk-free investment, you really will make very minimal returns, which is what we call the risk-free return. So we want to make more money, according to the title, without taking any risk. But in reality, we always teach our students that there's nothing as a free lunch. So how are we going to be able to do that? Well, the free lunch point comes with a tool that we call arbitrage. And what is arbitrage? Okay, arbitrage is to simultaneously buy and sell identical assets to profit from them when there's a price discrepancy. So I'll give a small example that we can relate to. Let's say we want to buy a kilogram of lemons, okay? And there's a market for lemons in Zamalek and another market in Heliopolis. And the Zamalek market is selling the lemons for £3, while the Heliopolis is selling it for £2. So there's definitely a price differential there. So if you actually buy the lemon in Heliopolis at £2 and then go sell it in Zamalek for £3, and you do that right away, you can actually make that £1 differential and put it in your pocket without taking any risk. Of course, you would have to subtract the transportation cost and the timing, of course, of that risk. But this is the whole. This is the concept of arbitrage: is to buy and sell in different markets at the same time the same underlying asset. So, for us to get started, I'd like to actually get you to know a few of the terms that are used or that we will be using in this lecture today. One of them is cross-listing. Okay, and cross-listing is really a process by which companies list their stocks on international exchanges in addition to their local listing. So for example, if anyone knows about any of the companies listed in Egypt, one of the famous ones, Orascom Telecom, has its primary listing of its shares in the Egyptian Stock Exchange, and it also has another listing in the London Stock Exchange of the same security. So this is a dual listed company. Why do companies do that? There's a variety of reasons that we can get into later on, but this is what cross-listing means. And another term that is very important for us to know is depository receipts. What is a depository receipt? A depository receipt is a certificate that indirectly represents ownership of shares in the company for domestic investors. And here, when I say domestic investors, let's say depository receipts are always listed in markets that are not the primary market of the company. So going back to the example of Orascom Telecom, Orascom's primary market is Egypt, so the shares are listed in Egypt, but they have depository receipts listed in the London Stock Exchange. So it is listed for the domestic players or domestic investors in London, okay? But the primary listing is in Egypt. How do these depository receipts get listed? It's very simple. There's a bank that goes in and buys shares in the primary listing, a bank, let's call it, in the case of Orascom, it's the Bank of New York Mellon. It goes in and buys shares from the Egyptian market, deposits them with them, and based on these shares, issue certificates, and they list these certificates on a secondary market, which is in that case the London Stock Exchange. We have two types of depository receipts, one called the ADR, and it stands for American Depository Receipts, because they're primarily listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and the other ones are called Global Depository Receipts, and most of these are listed on the London Stock Exchange. So these are two terms. Other terms that we need to know about are what is a bull market and what is a bear market. This is very important to know. And we've probably heard these before or read about them in the news. A bull market is a market that we anticipate is going up. So the share prices will be going up. A bear market is a market that where we anticipate share prices will be going down. And I see some of my students smiling and laughing about that because I always give them a way to remember that, what's a bull and what's a bear, and why is the bull going up and the bear going down. And I told them, well, let's see the bull. When the bull attacks you, how does he attack you? He attacks you like this, you know, from down to up. And when the bear attacks you, how does he attack you? He attacks you like that, you know, from up to down. So that's how actually we remember. I don't know if, please don't quote me, if that's the reason why, you know, they called them that. But at least this is some way we remember it. So that's important to know, a bull and a bear market. And we need to know what type of strategies do we use when we actually are in a bull market, and what strategy do we use when we're in a bear market. So if we are in a bull market, we think that the market is going up, we actually utilize something called the longing strategy or the long strategy. What is a long strategy? Long strategy is actually buying the share today at a cheap price and waiting for it until it goes up and then selling it. So it's buying low, selling high. That's what a longing strategy is. And this is used in a bull market. In a bear market, can I still trade and make money if the market is going down? Fortunately, yes. So people do not stop trading when they anticipate the markets are going down. They actually continue trading, but they use a different strategy than the longing strategy. They utilize something called the short selling strategy. And what is a short selling strategy? The short selling strategy is a sequence of things. If you look at the slide, it's actually you borrow shares from another person. So let's say Professor Everhart has 100 shares of Orascom Telecom, and he's holding onto them. He thinks they're going to go up. I think they're going to go down. So, and I think that there's a bearish market coming along. I actually borrow the 100 shares from Dr. Everhart, and then I immediately sell them in the market. I get the cash. I wait on the cash a little bit. I keep it with me until my prophecy reveals or happens, which is the market, the price goes down, and then I go back and I buy the 100 shares at a lower price than what I've borrowed them at, and return him 100 shares, and keep the differential in price in my pocket. So this is how I would actually be making money out of a market going down. Okay. So it's very important that we know all of these terms, because this is what we will be mixing and matching in order to make money without having to put any risk. So the lecture today will be summarizing our research, which I've been working with my colleague who's sitting in the front row, Ali Abbasouni, on actually arbitrage and emerging financial markets. The two markets, or the two laboratories we've been using, is the Egyptian market with its cross listing in the London Stock Exchange, and the Argentinian market with its cross listing in the New York Stock Exchange. So there's around 2,000 companies in the world that are cross listed. They actually are valued at 78 billion trades, and there's 1.84 trillion market cap. So this is the value of the companies that are cross-listed are valued at $1.84 trillion US dollars. Of course, as I said earlier, there are reasons for companies to cross-list, and one of them is actually motivations for better governance. So for example, if I'm in an emerging market and the corporate governance principles and regulations are not up to par to the board members of a company or to the majority owners of a company, and they would like to enforce better governance principles, one way of doing that is to go to another market that is more developed and has better corporate governance principles. So this is one way of doing that. Another way, or another reason, is for actually to attract funds. For example, if I'm an Egyptian company, if I'm Orascom Telecom, and I would like to raise capital, raise money from the market, and I think that, for example, there are some British investors that are very interested in my company, it's very hard for me to invite them all the way to come to Egypt and have them put money in the Egyptian market in Egyptian pounds. It's much easier for me to go to them and have them and provide them the share there and have it listed in front of them in their own market and in a currency that they're more comfortable with rather than the Egyptian pound. In that case, it would be the sterling pound or the US dollar. So these are reasons why companies cross-list. So moving forward, This is a diagram that shows more or less how shares are clustered. So if you look at the left-hand side, you'll see the old stock exchange, let's say in Egypt. And basically what is happening here is that there's a bank, a depository bank, let's say the Bank of New York Mellon, buys two shares locally in the Egyptian stock exchange and actually converts them into one depository receipt and lists that depository receipt in the New York Stock Exchange, let's say. And basically now there's two listings. There's the listing in the New York Stock Exchange on the right-hand side, which is one depository receipt. And on your left-hand side, you have two shares that are owned by the depository bank. So let's say I can go buy Orascom Telecom in the New York Stock Exchange on the right-hand side, buy that one depository receipt, and then go convert this depository receipt into two shares and sell them in the Egyptian market. And I can do this trade simultaneously to take advantage of the price discrepancy or the price differential between both of these listings. This is what we'll be doing. So in that case, there's a bundling ratio of 2-to-1. Two local shares equal one depository receipt. That's what the bank has done. And now you have it listed in two markets. And a term that we use is that both the depository receipts and the local shares are fully fungible. What does that mean? That means that I can buy it in one market and sell it in another market without any restriction whatsoever. So that's the concept of fungibility. I've promised myself, by the way, and everyone else, that I will try as much as possible not to have any formulas or equations, but I couldn't. I only had this one slide, and I think it's fairly easy, and I'll go through it as fast as possible without any pain, if you allow me. So basically what we're trying to do here is we're trying to see if for a duration of time, for a couple of years, if there were arbitrage opportunities in the Argentinian market with the New York Stock Exchange and in the Egyptian market with the London Stock Exchange. And to do that, we were testing a theoretical concept that is in all financial textbooks that is called the law of one price. And basically, what the law of one price says is that the price, if you look at this equation there, the price of a depository receipt at any point in time, okay, should equal to the price of the local share multiplied by the bundling ratio, which is the B, divided by the exchange rate. Because shares are traded in the local market in Egyptian pounds, let's say, and in the UK, in London Stock Exchange, they're traded in dollars. So we need to make sure that the law of one price is matching, right? That the price of the depository receipt in one market is equal to the price of the local share in the other market. So to do that, I need to make sure that the price at home multiplied by that bundling ratio in the previous example, if you guys look, it was 2-to-1, right? So I need to see if price at home times 2 divided by the exchange rate dollar to pound should give me the same price as the price of the depository receipt there. And the law of one price assumes that this should occur at all times. If it doesn't, then there are price discrepancies. And if there are price discrepancies, we can always make money out of these without taking risk using arbitrage opportunities. So this is basically the whole idea around the topic today. Some institutional framework, this is a little bit of background about both markets. They're both emerging markets. They're both very similar in size. They were founded around the same time. So more or less, just to give you a feel of where they are. And they both, what's very important is that they both have an electronic trading system. So unlike the example I gave earlier with the lemons, where I would have to buy it in Heliopolis and take the car and go all the way to Zamalek, here I can actually do it really instantaneously because of the fact that they are hooked online and it's just a click of a button rather than having to move and go back and forth. So let's look at some data extracted from the database that we have. Again, going back to the example of Orascom Telecom, this is August 13th, 2009. This is trading that happened between 11:08 to 11:19 a.m. Okay? And basically, you could see the red line there is the GDR price moving across time. So the GDR moving across time, and you have the blue line is the stock, the local price of the stock moving across time. And they both have been adjusted to be trading at the local price. So, or actually at the dollar price, I'm sorry. So in that regard, there's a time where actually the price differential is around 40 cents. And this happened between 11.08 to 11.19. So what happens is that people actually see that on their trading screens and automatically end up executing the simultaneous trades, which is basically buying in one market and short selling in another market. So in that case, let me ask you, where would you be buying and where would you be selling? Would you buy the lower price or the higher price? Buy the lower price. So definitely I will be buying it in the local market at 50.5, and then I would be selling it in the higher market at 50.9. So I can actually do this trade simultaneously without having to put a single penny from my own pocket, a single penny. Why? Because I can actually, in the London market, what can I do? I can borrow the shares from Dr. Everhart, as I said earlier. I borrow the 100 shares from him, and then go and sell them in the London Stock Exchange, get cash, take that cash, buy with it from the local market the share, and then return the stocks back to Dr. Everhart. So in that instance, I haven't put a single penny from my pocket. Let me repeat the example again, in case I was going a little bit fast. We all agreed that I'm buying at the local market and I'm selling at the foreign market, the GDR market. So I'm actually debating that I will not put a single penny from my pocket. Why am I not going to be doing that? Because I'm going back to the definition that I just had mentioned, which is short selling. Short selling, I can actually borrow shares without having to put any money, sell them immediately in the market, get the cash, take that cash, and buy from the Egyptian market where the share is a lower priced, the share, and then go give back the share to Dr. Everhart, and basically I've closed my position and I didn't have to put one single penny from my own pocket. This is an opportunity that was existing at that point in time. Okay, so this is more or less the opportunities that we've been looking at through our database, which is ranging between January 2008 to March 2010. And this is a very unique data set, which we have contacted the stock exchange and the clearing house, and were able to compile over a long period of time. And we have in that database around 4 million observations. So we're actually having to look in 4 million observations on these 2-3 minute intervals that you guys have just saw on Orascom Telecom, in order to try to find whether there were these arbitrage opportunities or not. And if there were, how much money was made out of these arbitrage opportunities. So sample characteristics that makes our research a little bit interesting to people is, again, the unique data set, the fact that there's not a lot of research being done on the Egyptian and the Argentinian market. This is something people always look into. The very interesting aspect is that we are actually looking at synchronous trading hours. So it's not like, for example, there's a big time zone difference between Egypt and the UK. There's only usually 1 hour difference in the summer and 2 hours in the winter. So it's not really a major time zone differential. Both markets are actually operating at the same time. Same applies with Argentina and New York. So there's no, and the other very important issue is that there's no trading barriers. The one issue that we have in Egypt that is not available elsewhere in the world is that the Egyptian market does not allow short selling. So the trading strategy that I had just explained, that we are doing, buying in Egypt and short selling in the UK, this is possible. But what if this example was the opposite? What if the price in London was at 50.5, while the price in the local market was at 50.9? Then I wouldn't be able to do the opposite because the Egyptian authorities do not allow short selling. And the beauty of the research here is that I'm comparing an asymmetric market, which is Egypt and London, to a symmetric market, which is the Argentinian market. So, for example, again, why is this research interesting? Is because I'm looking at two markets that are completely similar in terms of being emerging size and the fact that they're trading with their other markets through in the same time zones and no trading barriers and so forth. But the one issue that differentiates Egypt from Argentina is that Egypt has short selling restriction or a short selling ban on their market versus Argentina, which doesn't. So this is always important to compare and see what is the effect. Will people be making more money in a restricted market or less money? That's always something that we would like to see. In theoretically, it would be definitely less lucrative for investors to get into a market that has restrictions. That's always the case. Do the figures actually comply with that or not? That's another aspect that we look into right now. So a little bit about the data that we have. There are around 12 companies in Egypt that are duly listed. These are, some of the names you know. Our very own CIB, who's actually, we have a branch over here at AUC, is a company that is dual listed. EFG Hermes, Telecom Egypt, Orascom Construction Industries, Orascom Telecom, and so forth. And you'll see that put for you the dates when they were foreign listed and the bundling ratios that they use. For example, CIB uses a one-to-one bundling ratio. The one share equals one GDR in the London Stock Exchange, while, let's say, Palm Hills uses 1-to-5. So one share equals five shares equals one GDR. So that's and of course the sector they're in, the market capitalization. By the way, market capitalization is the price of a company in the market multiplied by the number of shares it has outstanding. That gives you the value of that company. When you add up all of the values of the companies that are listed in one market, that gives you the market capitalization of that market. Okay, so this is what we're looking at. Argentina, same. I don't think any of you would recognize the companies. I don't either. I just work with the data. But the same applies, their bundling ratios and where they're listed. I mean, most of them are on the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange. One company is listed on the NASDAQ, which is another stock exchange in the US, probably know about. So moving on with the methodology, what have we been doing? We looked at all of these 4 million observations and saw whether there's co-integration in the long run, meaning does the law of one price hold in the long run, meaning do prices move in tandem between the two markets, the GDR market and the local market, or they don't. We actually checked, and it turns out that they do move in tandem together. This raised another question. If they move in the long term in the right direction, were there any deviations in the middle that people could have actually taken advantage of and then ended up causing the fact that they would move in tandem? And we started looking at the price deviations, and we actually found price deviations like the example we just showed you on Orascom Telecom. And finally, we asked ourselves, do these price differentials make sense for people to take advantage of that trade and do the arbitrage or not? So in order for us to actually answer that question, we needed to estimate or to know what the transaction costs are. Exactly like the example I gave earlier with the lemon. you know, it's £2 in Heliopolis, £3 in Zamalek, but for me to buy it in Heliopolis and go and sell it in Zamalek, I will have to buy it, I would have to actually make more money than the cost of moving it from Heliopolis to Zamalek. This is an important point that we need to check. And once we have transaction costs, how profitable was it for the people that took advantage of that transaction? So let's look at a chart. I always like to you know, visualize things. But let's look at Banca Marco in Argentina. This is a really neat example, actually. There's a difference, as you could see, between the ADR market in red and the stock, the local listing in the Argentinian market. That difference between 7.85 to 7.95 is not large enough for people or for investors to take advantage of that arbitrage opportunity. It's not large enough. And then all of a sudden, this gap widens. And by the way, look, if you check the time, we're talking here about trading data that is within 8 minutes of each other. We're talking about 8 minute intervals here. So I'm looking at both screens in my office. I have a screen of the ADR market on the New York Stock Exchange. I have another screen of the Argentinian local listing. And I see that they're moving as it goes. And then all of a sudden, that gap widens. The minute that gap widens, it's lucrative for me to do the transaction, buy in one market and sell in the other market simultaneously. And the minute I do that, what happens? They converge back to the same part or to the same difference where it's not lucrative enough anymore. So this is basically a perfect example of why we see that there's co-integration between both markets, that they move together. But that's on the long term, on the long run. In the short run, there are always arbitrage opportunities that could be taken advantage of. And this is one perfect example of someone who've taken that opportunity. And because they've taken that opportunity, they ended up having to converge back the prices to their steady state areas where there's no arbitrage possible or arbitrage is not lucrative. To give some figures on the example of the Orascom Telecom example, if you look at 1201, the price was 50.5 locally, and the price in the GDR market was around 50.9. The volume of trade at the same point in time, this is data that we have as well, was around 10,000 shares in the local market and 5,000 shares in the GDR. We've decided our mechanism. We've decided to take the smaller number of shares, and we had estimated the transaction costs at 50 basis points, and 0.5% of the transaction value. And the transaction value is always the price multiplied by the volume. That's the value of the transaction. The transaction cost is 50 basis points or 0.5% of that value. So if we actually run the mathematics in that point C here of the equation, we will end up finding that this person in one minute was able to make $1,740. $1,740 in 1 minute. So that's a pretty neat job. Then the question that comes from my students then, are you doing that? And I tell them, well, if I was doing that, I wouldn't have been standing here talking about it. and actually going to the provost every year begging for a raise. So in hindsight, it's very easy to actually look at that. And that's what the research is doing. But in reality, you know, it needs someone who's dedicated, that looks at the market, you know, day in, day out, just does not leave the trading screens in order to depict these. So we've run the same exercise over, you know, the Egyptian data, and basically we were able to find that in that period between January 2008 to March 2010, if you were in Egypt and you wanted to take advantage of the dual listings of the companies we looked at, you would have made £1.7 million, which is approximately $308,000 in today's exchange rate. In Argentina, he would have made around 2.2 million Argentinian pesos, which are equivalent to $657,000 US dollars. So going back to the question of which market would you thought was going to get you more money, the one with the restriction or without, one without the restriction, actually, funny enough, this, by the way, this data is real and we haven't adjusted anything in it for the purpose of this presentation. Actually, you'll see that around half of the profits of what we saw in Argentina for the same period happened in Egypt or were grabbed in Egypt, while in Argentina it was a little bit more because of the fact that there was no restriction. I can do the same thing I'm doing in both markets. So to conclude, again, you know, this research was looking at the law of one price to see if it holds between Egyptian GDRs and Argentinian ADRs. And what we found was that on the long run it holds, but in the short term there are some deviations that result from some market inefficiencies. And these deviations have resulted in approximately $1 million of profits without having to put a single penny into it if you would have made use of them. The good thing about this research is that it compares a market with a restriction versus another market without a restriction. And basically, we are going to be trying to expand this research a little bit more by looking at what were the factors that caused these deviations, as well as looking at quote data rather than transaction data. I mean, what we've been looking at here is transaction data, what actually have happened. But there's a lot of data that we haven't looked at, which is basically the quotes or the bids and the offers that are not transacted. And these will give us probably a better idea of what opportunities have not been taken up. Thank you.